This is Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thanks for joining us for our candidate chat series leading up to the May 2nd election in Aspen. My guest is Skippy Mesereau. He is running for Aspen City Council. Skippy, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to start with an opening statement from you. Why are you running for City Council?
Well, thanks, Allison. You know, you just introduced all the amazing APR staff, and I would be remiss not to mention some of the other people in the room. Was just having an amazing conversation with Art Daly, our sheriff, Phyllis Bronson. I am amazingly gratified every day to wake up in what I think is the single best community in the world, and it's because of these guys. They've really left and created something amazing. I was always brought up to have a service orientation, to serve others, expectation that to whom much is given, much is expected, and I feel a real calling, a sense of duty to make sure that my community is even better for those who come next, and I think I can bring a fresh and unique perspective to the council table that will help us achieve that.
We will ask you what that is in just a moment, but you haven't been on council before. I have heard that people want to kind of get to know you better and where you stand. Can we just start with, can you give me a little background of your life history?
I mean, seems reasonable.
30-second life history.
30 seconds. I was born and raised in Chicago. I was on skis at Snowmass at 15 months old. My family has been coming here forever. My grandparents bought the first Tamarack, and I'm told 67. I had I grew up in a home with my grandparents, and my grandfather passed away when I was a junior, and the only reprieve I got from the sort of 3 months I spent by the bedside was 2 days where I went skiing up in Wisconsin, and I just really knew that I wanted to kind of ground myself in the mountains, but I didn't want to take a gap year because I was afraid I wouldn't go back to school. Candidly. So I did what any reasonable person would do, and I graduated a semester early from high school 4 days after I turned 18. The next morning at 4 a.m., I was driving to Aspen. Totally fell in love with the place. Lived here for 4 winters. You know, did all the service industry jobs, ski jobs. Went to CU Boulder, and then I ended up graduating early. Went to the quote-unquote real world. Had a litany of really transformational life experiences. But when I had the opportunity to work anywhere, I moved right back here. And you know, at this point, you're kind of going to have to drag me away.
That you curse. What's like the hardest job you ever had?
The hardest job I have ever had. That's a really great question. I would say, you know, it's interesting because I think the ones that are the most trying, the ones that are the longest hours or the most difficult, are the ones that I really, really loved. To me, it was actually the sort of monotonous jobs that I found the most difficult because it was so tough for me to find motivation in them. I find that with the more requirement or the more strenuousness that a job puts on you, I actually like that better.
And right now you say you work a job where you could work anywhere, and you chose Aspen. What's your profession now?
I had. Right now I'm the creative director and president of the board for Aspen Entrepreneurs. We are a valley-wide nonprofit. We help provide capital, access to mentorship, and resources for entrepreneurs and small businesses who want to really innovate in the retail, hospitality, tourism, and outdoor industries. So that is certainly place-specific, and we're here. When I moved here, that was the case, and luckily I found something permanent.
What are your top priorities? Why are you running for City Council?
Yeah, I think there are three primary reasons, and I thought long and hard about getting in this race, and I wanted to make sure that I was adding something unique to the conversation. So the first thing is really bringing a fresh perspective, a new set of eyes and life experiences to some of the problems we have all been looking at for a long time. You know, I think representative democracy works best, and it works when it's actually representative of its population, and we have really a great council. It is exceptionally thoughtful, but at the same time, they primarily come from the same sort of cloth. And while I think they do an amazing job of trying to reach out and empathize with everyone and succeed, at the end of the day, you know, you are the collection of your experiences. And so I think I can help us look at tomorrow's problems with tomorrow's tools as opposed to just yesterday's tools, which are also important to use as well. You want a big toolbox. Second thing, and this one's not sexy, but to me, it's the most important. I think we actually have to change the way our government functions. I think democracy is under question. I think we all remember how we felt November 8th, and that's not a consequence of what party you are in, but rather just the grinding feeling that that type of politics has. And I think a lot of that is structurally rooted in a system that was constructed in you know, the 1700s and hasn't kept up with the expectations of the 21st century. So I intend to be a very active council member in systematically looking at how we can make our government reflect all of us, not just a vocal minority. So that's going to be the second thing. And then the third is I think we really have to build a more livable, unified Aspen. We have done a tremendous job of intently and intentionally focusing on building a beautiful environment, our built environment, all these things. But I think we need to focus, in addition to, on the human element. What is community like? How are we colliding with one another? How are we interacting? Where are we living? So I really want to focus on the sort of human scale when we address policy.
Let me go back through each one of those. It sounds like you think maybe what's lacking on council, right? When you say they're all representing kind of the same thing, what's not being represented on council right now?
Well, I mean, I think you just actually have to look at the makeup. You know, generally speaking, I think we're 55 to 70. Free market homeowners, not all retired, but moving in that direction. And by the way, that's super important because that's a huge part of our community. And I have nothing bad to say about our council people. I think they show up every day. Service ain't easy. And they do it gracefully. But I think we would be better served with some people that represent young individuals, with more representation of women, Hispanics, certainly. So I'd like to see us move to a body that actually represents the community. And I think in this election, I represent the one unique choice to do that. I think the last time somebody ran who was even within 5 years of my age was Tory 16 years ago. I think it's time to broaden our representation.
And then when you say we need to change democracy, is that something, like, once you're on city council, is that something here at the local government level that you're seeing problems with that you think need changes?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the symptoms, you can diagnose a problem.
Okay.
I think if two-thirds of our population doesn't vote in a normal election, that suggests what we're doing isn't working. If we continually see ballot initiatives and referenda, that suggests that a lot of people don't feel like they are being represented. If our governing body is a uniform demographic group, that suggests that we are not making it attractive enough to serve. So while we do not look like Washington, thank God, that is an opportunity. It's not to say we have no problems. We do. I've seen this, you know, as chair of P&Z, I've seen increasing cynicism, but as a small community with unified values that really care and are willing to work together, we can and should say that won't happen here and set a model for other communities to follow.
And then as like a city council member to help the livable, unified Aspen, do you have a specific ordinance in mind? Do you have specific things you could change to make that happen?
Yeah. I mean, the platform is multifaceted, right? So housing is a really big thing. Valley-wide transportation is a huge thing for me. I think a more walkable Aspen is a big thing for me. So let's focus on one of those, right?
Okay. How does city council affect housing?
Let's take housing, right? One, let's recognize that we have a great affordable housing system. You know, a group of people got together in the 70s before anybody was thinking like this, even in many big cities, and created a program that has really been the linchpin of our community. So we should first be really grateful for that. But our system is undergoing as things do after 40 years of churn, increasing pressures. And so I think we need to address those head on to make sure that we have a housing system that in the future addresses our needs. I would do that in several ways. First, our systems still run on paper, which means we really don't understand who's living in it, how it's being used, or how it's being utilized. We have to digitize it right away. I've been really grateful to work with Mike Gajowski for some time now, and I know he's passionate about that. I want to help support that effort. Once we actually understand how our stock is being utilized, we then have to make sure that we're optimizing what we currently have, which is to say we should be using every bedroom of our affordable housing system, and we need to create incentive programs to make sure that we are getting each person in the product and unit they need to be, keeping our commitments to the generation that built this place and let it here for us, but also making sure that we have a workforce tomorrow that can be housed. Thirdly, this is a valley-wide conversation, and we need more continuity in the conversation across the valley, and that's something that I would like to help convene as a council person. Fourth, I would really like to support the credits program. It's shown to be far more efficient use of taxpayer funds. We're building appropriately and quickly with it. I think we can expand the envelope for where those things can land. And then lastly, we need to look at what our actual product offerings are. It won't be for everybody, but when I talk to my peer group, what we are interested in or willing to accept in terms of an actual product is significantly different than what people desired 20 years ago. And those will allow us to house more workers with less of a footprint and less of a environmental impact. So I'd like to explore new products as well.
What do we want that they didn't want 20 years ago?
You know, I hear from a lot of people that the reason they came here is primarily outdoors and community, so they don't need a 900 square foot or in some instances 1200 square foot one bedroom. There have been a lot of adaptive changes in design, modular design, flexible floor plans. I hear a lot about tiny homes and small communities these days. You know, that's an amazing opportunity for Aspen to live its green principles, make sure we're housing our workforce and not add substantially to our built environment.
If we have a valley-wide solution to this, are we really creating the kind of space in Aspen that you want, which I think I've heard you say, you know, it's so great when you're walking down the street and it takes 10 minutes to go a block because you're hugging every friend you see. If we're putting everyone down valley, how are we going to have that kind of organic running into each other?
More hugs per minute in Aspen than any other place in the world, which is why I love it. That is completely true. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you can grow your family. You don't have to wall it in. I think building walls is probably not the optimum choice for a progressive community these days. But you raise a great point. We need to have whole systems thinking. You know, all of these things that we historically have looked at as individual issues aren't, right? If you build more housing in town, well, that alleviates your need for transportation. So that is a big part of the conversation as well, and we should be thinking holistically about it, which is why you want to have valley coordination.
So you haven't served on council before, but you do have a record on Planning and Zoning Commission, including the current chairperson of that. Let's talk about your work there for a while. 2016, your attendance record has come up. 10 out of 24 meetings were missed.
Yeah, that's correct. And what I would say is, you know, 2016 was a pretty tough year for me. I lost my best friend. I ended a very long-term relationship. And my work life was very much in flux. I had a startup that went under as well. And that took me away for some time. And you know, I don't think I've ever missed a meeting when I was in town. I went back and reviewed the record, and in that year, I was below the average by a couple percent for people. But in both my first year and my third year, my attendance has been significantly higher than others on the commission. And at the end of the day, look at the track record. You know, I was asked to join the committee. The second year, my peers asked me to be co-chair. The year following that, 2016, despite that, two individuals, without me knowing about it, asked me to be chair. And now, moving into the election, every single member of Planning and Zoning has endorsed my campaign. So I think that should speak to the record.
Do you have some proud moments, some things you want to highlight from your service at PZ?
Yeah, they're more qualitative than quantitative. I think a lot of the community doesn't understand, or who comes to a PNC meeting, right? But it's not a policy-making body. You have a set list of stringent criteria that you have to follow. And what I found in my early years was that very often the thing we would end up feeling or saying was, this is a poor project for Aspen, but we have to approve it based on the criteria. Or the converse, man, this would be great for Aspen, but unfortunately we can't grant you an approval. And so as I stepped into a leadership role, what I tried to do was change the way we communicated, both publicly to council in minutes and to the applicant. And I started really explaining not just the decision, but the what, the why, and the how. And what I started to see is, one, those ideas or thoughts filter up into council, the decision-making body, who, kudos to them, took on something really, really tough of aligning our zoning standards with the AACP. So that was a win. But what I really got to see was people on the other side of the table who didn't get favorable results, instead of leaving angry and upset and coming back next time asking for more, thinking it was going to somehow move them in the direction they wanted, they started coming up again and saying, you know what, I know you guys really care about this community, I get it, thank you. And when they came back, they would come back more often than not to play by the rules. That's really healthy, and it's something that we have to do at the council table and writ large in the public process, is communicate better, more authentically, more clearly, with more intention, and take what has been a destructive cycle and turn it into a virtuous cycle. We can do that.
There's a couple issues that have come in front of planning and zoning this year that will come in front of the council in the next 4 years, were you to be elected. I think it was just kind of to show and get your opinion about the chain store ordinance, and I believe you recused yourself from that discussion. Can you explain why?
Yeah, as the creative director for Aspen Entrepreneurs, the group that had initiated that discussion came to me for my thoughts, and so I thought, since I had been privy to the process beforehand, it was appropriate to step back.
Was that a paid consulting?
It was not.
Okay,
no.
The Aspen Entrepreneurs pays you?
Yeah, I get paid for my role, but I was never paid.
So they came to you as like a thought leader and wanted your opinion. What did you
say
to them the first time you saw that ordinance, or what's your thought, honestly, on what passed?
As candidly as I can be, when they first came to me, I was skeptical. I didn't know the players involved, and my first inclination was I want to get to know these people, which I did. Ultimately, we deduced that we identified the problem in the same way, loss of character, lack of opportunity. So we agreed on that. And then I started to really look at the policy, and I did what I always do, which is I searched out those people who I find to be experts in that field, and I dug in with them in a very real way. I found people on each side of the issue, and I very intently tried to dig into what their position was, why it was that, what they saw the outcome of this being. At the end of the day, while it was very certainly an imperfect policy and a blunt instrument, I thought we were in a place where it was worth trying something. And as the process continued, I learned a lot, because we ended up in the room with all the stakeholders, from property owners to city staff, etc. And I was frankly blown away by how many of these people that often are seen as sort of boogeymen really care for the town and were willing to work and give. And so at the end of the day, the ordinance that passed, it exempts everything in town, right? I mean, it's not going to change your life tomorrow, and I'm not sure how many policies stand the test of the 10 years it would take to have an effect. But I think what it really did do was start a conversation that brought everyone into the fray. It didn't go on the ballot and become a divisive, factless ballot issue. It's a starting point for a really constructive conversation about how we, in the future, support the character and businesses we want, to me, that's a huge positive compared to where we could have been. And so as a council person, I really want to focus on how do we get from here to there. And given that it's my day job, I feel like I have particular expertise in that area.
Okay. You were part of the Planning and Zoning Commission that denied Gorsuch House, who then appealed to City Council to get it heard instead. Why vote against that project?
Yep. So just as mentioned in the previous question, this is not a subjective thing for us. We're not there to create policy or to decide what lodges are great or not. We have a set of criteria, and it did not meet those criteria. What I can say is that throughout that process, the input that was given by my fellow commissioners and myself helped make it a better project. And I think it continues in that process. And I'm pretty clear about what my issues are. And I'd encourage anyone to go back and read the minutes if you want to understand kind of what my process was. And I think we would all be best served, not speaking about of course, that chalice, but with a vital historic base of the mountain.
Sorry, I don't want to go back and read the minutes right now. Can you give me your stance on the Gorsuch House project? You don't think that hotel should be built?
No, that's not correct.
Okay.
So if you would go back and read the minutes, and I want to be really careful to respect this process and the advice of the city attorney, et cetera.
Okay.
But no, a no vote on planning and zoning doesn't mean that you don't think a project should be built.
Okay.
What it means is that the project that you reviewed at that time did not meet the criterion that were set forth by policymakers.
But you support a hotel at the bottom of 1A? Personally, not
personally?
Application.
You know, as a former Big Mountain coach for AVSC, as a person who's got a photo of my grandma and grandpa riding up 1A in the 50s, I would love to see that area come to life and embrace our history.
Will you have to recuse yourself if that does come in front of council while you're on council?
Yep. Any previously reviewed project means that you do have to recuse yourself, and that's no different than almost any other elected official that we've had, from the mayor to Ann Mullins to Art, for different reasons. But yeah, it's the norm.
Another issue that's come up a lot during these chats is the city's decision to retain the rights to dam up Castle Maroon Creeks. What have you been following that? How much do you know about that situation?
Have I been following it? Yes. I've been following it. I just laugh because I live in council chambers for the last 5 years, it seems.
Do you attend the meetings?
Oh yeah. When we initially launched the Next Gen Commission and I was asked to be chair, I take it really seriously, and I thought that it was really critical to not just have a finger on the pulse, but to really understand what was happening in the city, how it was happening, who was who the players were, so that we could be really effective. So for the last 5 years, I mean, Art will tell you, I've been in the front row, I have to imagine, more than anyone else during that period, and probably more than anyone else has ever run for council. So yes, I've spent a lot of time in that room and in other places.
So what are your thoughts on the water rights?
Yeah, I think this is a great opportunity for us not to demagogue an issue, but to understand the complexities that are there and set smart environmental policy, right? We have two interests that we need to hold in concert, right? The first one is the proposed dams up Castle and Maroon Creek are obviously not right for that wilderness area or our community. Now, we are founded on our environment being a pillar of who we are. So I'm certainly not for those dams. At the same time, let's have wide eyes and recognize that we have to protect our water right for an uncertain climate future. We don't know what the weather will be like. We don't know what our natural reservoir, which is the snow, will look like in 50 years. And so we need to make sure that we have the opportunity for our children to be, and our grandchildren to live here. So we can say that we don't support these dams, but work to find alternative solutions so that we can maintain our water right for a uncertain future.
So would it have made more sense for council to just vote not to retain those and then just figure out some other way?
Absolutely not. No. A water right is not something that you can replace. It is a linear progression. When you relinquish your right, you go to the back of the line. We have kept our water right a six-year interim, the first one coming up in 1971. There are still no dams up there. So to conflate these two issues, to suggest that holding on to your water right means a dam goes in tomorrow, is to take what is a complex issue that deserves a complex solution and to try and demagogue it into something for your own gain. And that is not how we should be making policy.
So there's two council seats that are open, assuming you would like to have one of them.
Yes, I would. That would be great. Vote for me.
Do you have like an ideal makeup of that council to make it, you know, as diverse as it can be? And what would your negotiation style, like, how do you see the five of you working together?
Yeah, you know, I'm not here to tell other people how to vote. I've got my own feelings. You know, I think we have several great candidates running for office. One of them sitting right in front of me, Art Daly. I mean, we've developed quite a rapport, and it's been amazing to learn from and download from.
But you've made up your mind who you'll be voting for?
I never make up my mind till the last day. I take my right to vote really seriously. I vote in person. I know who I would vote for today if the election was held. But as far as how I would comport myself on council, I'm a researcher, I'm a listener, I really like deliberation and conversation. I don't think it happens enough at the council table. So I would work to really try and hear from my fellow council members in an open way where they are and try to make the decision-making process more deliberative as opposed to one where we show up, we've got our research, you know, we've read our packet, we've got our kind of pre-recorded or pre-written speech, and then we just say what we think. I think we're better served as a community with a deliberative process in terms of better outcomes in decision making, but critically, if we want to rebuild trust in government, then what people want to do is see the process and understand where it's coming from.
I only have a couple questions left, so anyone else who wants to submit them can write them now, and Laura will come around. One of which is, how will you act if you have your mind made up about an issue and then public comment comes on the day of the vote and the majority of the public comment is against your feelings on that issue?
Yeah, so I think it's really important that we listen to people who take the time to show up. It's something that we've done at Planning and Zoning, amongst other places. I think what we're missing is the broader representation of the community. You know, most people have jobs. They don't get to spend 10 hours in a basement waiting to make comment about something. You know, way back when, representative democracy was really our first attempt at crowdsourcing, right? This is us saying, you know, one guy on high, at the time it was always a guy, this is not a sexist statement, shouldn't be making a decision. What we want to do is bring in representatives and bolster them within their communities. But as technology has changed and as we have access to, you know, calls to Tokyo or socks from Amazon in our pockets in hours, we haven't kept up and expanded that pie. So what I would do is, one, I wouldn't make up my mind until I've heard from everybody. Two, I would listen intently to those who do show up. But three, I would lead an effort to create a platform by which people can, wherever they are, have input on issues they care about from where they are. So if I'm a dishwasher in the back of Just the Snows here and I notice something, I should be able to report that. If I have a fix or an amendment in a wiki-style forum to our zoning rules, I should be able to put that in. That should be transparent to everyone. It should be something that others can respond to, that we can poll. So now I've actually created an environment for better decision-making because I can both listen to the person across from me, but then I can also say as a council person, bolstered by data, right, objective data, that's wonderful. And just so you are aware, these other 274 people throughout the last 3 months have had this to say, and I'm going to hold both of those things. And at the end of the day, while you listen to all that, leadership is about setting a path that is not just responsive, but is actually proactive, sticking to those things and bringing people along. And sometimes you have to make the hard decision, not just the easy one.
Skippy, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the tea. It's delicious.
Skippy Mesereau is running for Aspen City Council. The election is May 2nd. This is Aspen Public Radio's Candidate Chats. I'm Allison Bektesh.
Thanks. Hey, for some of those